A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I am glad you're with me on the program today. Hunter Biden's trial officially underway in Wilmington, Delaware. The jury seated on Monday. A couple of gun owners on the jury. A couple of folks who have firsthand experience dealing with friends or family members, loved ones who have struggled with addiction. It'll be interesting to see if the makeup of the jury makes them any more sympathetic to Biden's defense. I suspect that Biden is going to have a very uphill climb in trying to convince a jury that he did not know he was an unlawful user of drugs when he purchased a revolver, so he didn't knowingly lie on the 4473. Prosecutors are going to have some physical evidence. They say that the pouch where the gun was stored actually had cocaine residue on it. They are expected to call witnesses who will testify, including several of Biden's own family members who will testify about his addiction. And they can use his own memoir where he talked about using crack cocaine. I think the phrase was every 15 minutes during that same time period in which that revolver was purchased. You know, Biden's defense has also tried to raise a Second Amendment challenge, but both the trial judge and the Third Circuit Court of Appeals have said that's an issue you've got to raise on appeal. If you're convicted, if you take a guilty plea, then you can talk about the constitutionality of the statute prohibiting unlawful users of drugs from possessing firearms, but you can't bring it up at trial. I suspect that he is going to have the opportunity to bring that up at some point, either through a guilty plea again or through a conviction. But we will see. We're going to be covering the trial throughout the week. It is maybe 2 weeks. It is expected to last, I think, this weekend next. And townhall.com also providing the live coverage from Wilmington as well. I'd encourage you to check it out. But this is an issue that does go beyond Hunter Biden, right? I know that there have been a lot of talking heads. I think Trey Gowdy on Fox News said the other day, well, nobody gets charged for this. This is not exactly true. There's actually a case up before the Supreme Court right now called U.S. versus Daniels involving a man from Mississippi, Patrick Darnell Daniels, who was pulled over in a traffic stop, admitted that he used marijuana. I think he said about 14 days a month, had pot in the car with him, had at least one firearm. I think there were maybe more than one firearm in the car with him. And he was charged federally, and he was convicted federally of being an unlawful user of drugs in possession of a firearm. Patrick Darnell Daniels got 46 months in prison for that crime. And the Supreme Court took a hold of that case. I guess it's been a couple of months now. They haven't done anything with it. They haven't granted cert. They haven't denied it. The expectation is that when the Rahimi decision comes down, maybe as early as this Thursday, that there will be some guidance to the courts regarding the prohibited persons statute and who is actually forbidden from possessing a firearm. We don't know what the court's going to do. There's, I think, an expectation that the court is going to talk about a dangerousness standard, that you can't simply deny somebody who's been convicted of a crime punishable by more than a year in jail of their Second Amendment rights. You can't take them away automatically, but instead you have to demonstrate that this individual actually does pose a danger to themselves or others before you can strip them of their Second Amendment rights. Now, again, we don't know what the court's going to do. But the fact that they're keeping a hold of this case, again, demonstrates that it's not just Hunter Biden who has faced federal charges. And of course, when you're talking about state and local laws, it gets even more confusing, right? Because more than half of the country has legalized marijuana for medical use. I think 24 states have legalized the recreational use of marijuana. Yes, there are more constitutional carry states than there are states where you can recreationally use cannabis. But this is still the sort of, hodgepodge of local, state, federal laws. Federal laws are controlling, but federal law has to be enforced by federal prosecutors, right? You can't charge somebody with violating a federal law in a county courtroom. You can't charge somebody with violating a federal law, in a municipal court. That's not how it works. You need the U.S. Attorney's Office to bring charges. The reason why I bring this up is because there's a weird case out of Nebraska where it seems like a lot of local officials just sort of completely disregarded that fact. in order to keep a man from having his firearm returned to him. I will say the story does have a happy, if not frustrating, ending here, but here's the headline. Fremont police return man's handgun after a year-long dispute. This is Fremont, Nebraska. The individual in question, a gentleman named Ronald Curdy, lives in Kansas, but in January of 2023, he was driving through Fremont. He got pulled over for a traffic violation. And while he was stopped, he told officers, hey, you know what? I've got my handgun. It's in my luggage. It's in the back of the SUV. It's secure, just so you know. Trying to be helpful, right? Police also found him, though, to be in possession of a small amount of cannabis as well as unknown drug paraphernalia, according to the Fremont Tribune. So the county attorney, Pamela Hopkins, offered Curdy a deal. I'll drop the possession of drug paraphernalia. You plead guilty to possession of marijuana less than an ounce. And on May 3rd of last year, that's what Curdy did. He was sentenced to a $300 fine. But the gun that had been taken from Curdy at the time of his arrest was not returned to him after his guilty plea. That's when the fight began. So after Curdy had pled guilty, he petitioned the judge to have his gun returned. And the judge agreed. He said, yeah, Fremont Police Department, you got to give Mr. Curdy his gun back. City Attorney Molly Miller then filed an appeal seeking to overturn Klein's June 15, 2023 ruling, ordering the Fremont Police Department to return the gun, stating in a motion that doing so would cause the Fremont Police Department to violate federal law by returning a firearm to somebody who was an unlawful user of drugs. That was the reason that Miller cited, right? That he had pleaded guilty to possession of marijuana, less than an ounce. Noting that under federal firearms law, it is unlawful for any person to sell or otherwise dispose of any firearm or ammunition to any person who is an unlawful user or is addicted to any controlled substance. After hearing the city's appeal, the judge then amended his original order and issued a new ruling that allowed Fremont to retain possession of Curdy's handgun for a maximum of 1 year from the date he pleaded guilty. Klein ruled that he could regain possession of the firearm after May 3rd, 2024. So this is already a little weird, right? The city attorney is right about the federal statute in question, but I don't think the city actually ever proved that Ronald Curdy was an unlawful user of drugs. They proved that he was in possession of less than an ounce, but I don't know that Mr. Curdy admitted to using drugs, right? So already there are issues here. And then for the judge to kind of make this arbitrary decision of, okay, well, they can keep your gun for a year, but that's it, right? Now, Curdy did admit that he had pot with him. He talked with the Fremont Tribune last year, and he said, yes, I did have cannabis at the same time I possessed a gun. But he said he believed the ever-changing legal status of cannabis across the nation raised questions for him and his attorney about restricting a person's Second Amendment rights merely for using a substance that is legal in a particular state. He says, well, I'm moving to Missouri. If I were to go to Missouri, become a resident, and I decided that I wanted a medical card, am I signing away my gun rights in that state if I get the card? Then the short answer is yes, you are. The ATF has actually tried to mess with medical marijuana users in Arkansas, reaching out to the state and basically giving them a hard time, saying that, listen, they can have a medical card, they can have a concealed carry license, but they can't have both. The state of Oklahoma has also tried to do the same thing at the state level. If you possess a medical marijuana card, there are gun owners that have had a really hard time with that. So that is technically the short answer. Now, I know that the Biden administration has said they're reclassifying or rescheduling cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, which will allow it to be prescribed by a doctor, so that would help folks out, at least on the medical side of things. But recreationally, no, you're still under federal law and not allowed to possess marijuana and a gun at the same time, even after that rescheduling takes place. Now, you know, Curdy's right. This is an open question, right? I mean, again, we just talked about the Daniels case. But it is not a question that has been resolved in Curdy's favor at this point. So Curdy tried to get his gun. The judge originally said yes. The police department said no. And the judge said, fine, you can get your gun back in a year. When Curdy had gone to get his gun in 2023, another oddity happened. According to Curdy, this is from the Fremont Tribune, he said, the clerk told me that there's a new federal law that they can't give me the weapon back until a year after this charge. I asked her, so you're stripping me of my Second Amendment rights because of a drug charge. Now, I suppose it's possible that some new federal statute came into play last year or the year before last that the clerk knew what they were talking about. I haven't seen any such statute. I'm not aware of any statute that says somebody who's been arrested for possession of marijuana or possession of any unlawful drug could actually have their firearm taken from them and then returned in a year. You know, DOJ's interpretation, as best as I've been able to figure, is that somebody's an unlawful user of drugs for about 18 months after they use the drug in question. So even then, the 12-month period doesn't apply. Honestly, this seems like the local courts there were just sort of making it up as they went along. And, I mean, I guess you could argue in the absence of Supreme Court guidance, maybe that's what judges are supposed to do. But citing non-existent federal statutes, that's weird. Now, Curdy, I don't know if he decided not to appeal this case, if it was just, you know, cheaper to buy himself a new gun and then go back and get his old gun a year later, rather than, you know, fight these legal expenses. Whatever the reason, Curdy did not apparently continue to fight with this with the police department. And he did. He did have his firearm returned to him this week. Thankfully, it was May 28th. Curdy told the Fremont Tribune that he had just picked up his Ruger pistol from the Fremont Police Evidence Room. Again, almost, more than a year after he had pleaded guilty to the simple possession charge, and almost a year after the judge had originally said that Mr. Curdy could get his gun back. You know, these cases, I mean, again, this is a local news story. This is not going to make national headlines. And I don't know how many other individuals are in straits that are similar to Mr. Curdy's situation. But, you know, this idea that Hunter Biden's the only one who has to deal with this stuff, that's not the case. Hunter Biden's the only one that people are writing news stories about. There are very few people who are writing about Patrick Darnell Daniels, even though, again, he got a 46-month prison sentence for being a pot smoker or a pot user while possessing firearms. The media bias against Hunter Biden is real. And again, it may very well be that these are federal statutes that are not often pursued. But Biden's not the only one to deal with this. And again, when you get down to the state and local level, it is even more confusing. I am hopeful that the Supreme Court's decision in Rahimi is going to provide some relief to individuals like this, not just folks like Brian Range, who were convicted of a misdemeanor offense, punishable by more than a year in prison. And Brian Range can't own a gun, even though he got probation for falsifying his income on a food stamp application like 20 years ago. I am hopeful that the Supreme Court is also going to issue some guidance in Rahimi that will give relief to people like Patrick Darnell Daniels. Won't help Ronald Curdy, but it might help the Ronald Curdys of the world going forward. That, yes, just because you might happen to smoke a joint, that does not mean that you should forevermore lose your right to keep and bear arms. And honestly, the court's guidance will hopefully be helpful to prevent situations like Mr. Curdy's from developing, because it seems pretty clear that the judge in this case, even the city attorney in this case, were sort of, they were citing the Bruin decision, right? They were pointing to what the Supreme Court had to say. They just weren't making a lot of sense with how they're doing it. So hopefully, with a good decision in Rahimi, there will be some explicit guidance going forward. And again, individuals like Ronald Curdy don't have to lose their rights for a year based on a small amount of marijuana discovered in their car. All right. We will continue following, by the way, the Hunter Biden trial at BearingArms.com. Again, I would remind you to check out townhall.com's continuing coverage of the Hunter Biden trial as well. Should wrap up next week, I think, is the expectation of the judge anyway. So we'll see what happens. All right. Before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research does tirelessly seek out financial experts, the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. And Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right. Excuse me. Turning our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with that awful story out of Minneapolis, where a Minneapolis police officer, Jamal Mitchell, shot and killed. And as it turns out, the man accused of murdering Officer Mitchell, well known to law enforcement, had actually been on the run for 2 years after failing to show up for a court appearance. This is, this is infuriating, frankly. 35-year-old Mustafa Muhammad, not legally allowed to possess a firearm. He was convicted of a felony back in 2007. First-degree burglary of a Minneapolis home. The burglary took place in 2006. He was convicted in 2007. A woman living inside the home was assaulted at the time of the burglary. And ever since, Mohammed has been prohibited from owning a firearm. And by the way, even if the Supreme Court establishes a dangerousness standard for prohibiting people from owning a firearm, Muhammad probably would have been considered dangerous, given the violent aspect of that crime. He was still on probation for the burglary in 2008, when he was later arrested and convicted of robbing a Minneapolis auto parts store. Again, another crime of violence. 2013, he and a couple of other individuals were stopped by Eden Prairie police officers. They reported smelling marijuana near a minivan. The first officer on the scene used force, tasing Muhammad, claiming that he was defiant, and walked away from where they were attempting to try to pat the men down. Police never found drugs, by the way, worth noting, but they did find a handgun after handcuffing Muhammad, tucked behind the driver's side wheel of the minivan next to where Muhammad had lied down and was ultimately tased. There was also a magazine and a round of ammunition found on Muhammad's person. Prohibited person, you're not allowed to possess a single round of ammunition. Muhammad saw the case move to federal court. He was convicted of illegal possession of a firearm and ammunition. He was sentenced in 2015 to 8 years in prison. According to KSTP, he next shows up in court records in 2022, again accused of illegal possession of a firearm. And this is where things get really frustrating. So at this point, when he's arrested in 2022, he's been convicted of at least two crimes of violence, right? The burglary in which a woman was assaulted, and then the armed robbery of an auto parts store. He's also been convicted twice of being a felon in possession of a firearm. So this is 2022, right? This is Minneapolis 2022. This is after the George Floyd riots. This is after the defund the police movement has taken root in the Minneapolis City Council and at the DA's office as well, right? and in the criminal justice system, I think it has to be said. So Muhammad made bond. He was released to electronic home monitoring in August of 2022. But the very next month, a judge in Hennepin County District Court removed the requirement that Muhammad have an ankle monitor. You're free. Just show up in court in November, Mr. Muhammad. Well, Mr. Muhammad did not show up in court in November. And police have been looking for him ever since. There was a warrant that was issued for his arrest the day after he failed to show up in court that was still active on Sunday when investigators with the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension released his name in relation to last Thursday's shootout. KSTP says orders to remove electronic home monitoring even a month later are not necessarily unusual, a subject matter expert explained. They don't say who that subject expert was, but whatever. They say, although it's not immediately clear why the decision was made in this case, according to publicly available court records, the judge's order noted that prosecutors did not object. Again, why would they? This was Minneapolis in 2022. This was when the defund the police mentality was rampant in Minneapolis. And by the way, the violent crime rates reflect that mentality in Minneapolis. So I'm not surprised that the judge or that the prosecutor did not object to this. And maybe if the prosecutor had objected, the judge would have overruled that objection and said, "Now, Mr. Muhammad doesn't need to have an ankle monitor on him." But again, here's somebody with a lengthy criminal history, a violent criminal history, caught for, I believe that was the third time that he was found to be in illegal possession of a firearm. And it just wasn't a big deal. Even after Mr. Muhammad had served or been sentenced to an 8-year federal prison term, the local courts simply didn't take this seriously. And 2 years later, a police officer in Minneapolis is dead. All right. Today's Armed Citizen story from Orange County, California, where the Orange County Sheriff's Department says a rideshare driver came to the aid of a woman who was being attacked outside of an apartment. This was over the weekend. The suspect who was assaulting the woman may face charges, but the sheriff's office hasn't said anything about the rideshare driver facing any charges. It was about 7:45 Sunday night, an apartment complex in a street called Custer Way. And they say that the rideshare driver just dropped off a passenger and saw this woman being assaulted, and he intervened. He drew his firearm, he fired a shot, hit the suspect who was assaulting the woman, then called 911, stayed on the scene, spoke to police. The woman treated the scene by Orange County Fire Authority paramedics. The man who was allegedly assaulting her taken to a hospital where at last report he was in critical but stable condition. Again, no word on any charges for the driver. Sounds like the sheriff's department believes that he was acting in defense of another. Probably going to lose his job thanks to Uber and Lyft's driver disarmament policies. But you can always find another job, right? You can't always save a life. And I think the sounds like the driver did the right thing. So we'll keep our eyes open for any more details. They're out of Orange County, California. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Another California man, this one a Northern California individual, who rescued a woman who had been missing for days. And this truly is just, you know, a case of in the right place, at the right time. Pasquinta, California. Outside of Pasquinta, California. This was last Friday, May 31st. Connor Kennedy, who was an employee of Crane Mills, was on a forest road. I mean, this is out in the middle of nowhere. And he runs across this vehicle on this farm road or on this forest road. And he immediately thought, okay, this car shouldn't be here. Something's wrong. Well, as it turns out, 6 days earlier, the Red Bluff, California Police Department, it issued a silver alert asking people to be on the lookout for 77-year-old Karen Lee Hafey, who had gone missing from her home in Red Bluff. Connor Kennedy found her in her car. The battery had died. She had no water. So Connor Kennedy had a water bottle of his own, gave her something to drink, said, let's get you in my vehicle. He didn't know any of this at this point. He just knew that there was a woman who was there who needed help. And so when he drove into town, he found out that this was the woman who'd been missing for almost a week. Absolutely unbelievable. Crane Mills on its Facebook page said a huge shout out to Connor Kennedy for his quick thinking and decisive actions this morning. Without flagging, he noticed an unfamiliar vehicle parked in front of one of our gates, and upon investigation, found an elderly woman who had been missing since Sunday. Recognizing her poor condition, he calmly transported her down to Pasquinta, where a Cal Fire medical team administered treatment. Outstanding work, truly. I mean, a 77-year-old without water, without food, if he had not stumbled across Karen Lee Hafey that morning, she very easily could have perished before somebody else found her. So, yeah, truly in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Connor Kennedy, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I am looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. And don't forget, Wednesdays, that's when we do our VIP Gold Live Chat. Hot Air's Ed Morrissey and myself. We do it every Wednesday, 1:30 Eastern. Would love for you to be a part of that. All you have to do is sign up to become a VIP Gold member. And you can do that at BearingArms.com. In fact, if you use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, you can get 50% off your VIP Gold membership or your VIP membership. You get exclusive content. You'll get an ad-free experience. You'll be able to comment on all stories. And again, if you're a VIP Gold member, you get to do that not just at Bearing Arms, but at Town Hall, Hot Air, Twitchy, PJ Media, Red State, the entire Town Hall Media family of libraries. And there's so much great content that's available for our VIP Gold members. I hope that you'll check it out. Again, use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. You get 50% off of your VIP Gold membership or your VIP membership. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. In the meantime, thanks again for tuning in. Enjoy your 2A Tuesday. Be well. Be safe. And be free.